Yeah. I'm very excited to get to play at Mount Sequoia. It's the yearly concert that makes me finish writing the six or so songs that I've been working on all year. So,
you're better with a deadline? Is that what you're saying?
I'm always better with a deadline. But the other thing is that Mount Sequoia Music on the Mountain is a listening venue, and as opposed to a selling beer venue or a dancing venue or just a out in the park having fun venue, it's a venue where people actually come to listen to the songs, listen to the singer-songwriter, and it's just a beautiful thing. Last year's performance was one of the top two concerts that I've ever given, because the music is really amplified and enhanced by the audience paying attention. I don't really know how to explain that, but they just give you an energy that makes you a notch better than you usually are. And that's one of the few venues in Fayetteville where it's truly a listening venue. I'm sure Walton Arts Center is definitely a listening venue, but you got to be pretty good to play at Walton Arts Center, I think.
When you talk about, you know, the audience, I mean, the audience is there specifically to hear you. Like you said, there's not a TV on behind you. Just knowing that gives you more energy, or is it the actual response that you get from the audience?
I think there's an energy that's created, a symbiotic relationship that happens between the performers and the audience when they're truly hanging on everything that's going on stage, and you feel it on stage, or at least I feel it on stage, and the guys that play with me, I know they feel it too, and then we feel it from each other, and then it just builds, and the whole thing gets better than what it really should be, is what happens a lot of the times. Kind of that the collective is better than the sum of the parts, or whatever that's saying.
Well, I've talked to other people who've played this series, and they say it's as if the audience is there with you. It's not like you're performing for them, you're performing with them.
With them is a good way to put that. It's like they become an integral part of the show and the relationship that develops there. And that's the thing that's so special about music to me, is it's the relationship. I guess at the core level, it's the relationship of notes to each other, but then it becomes a relationship of musicians to each other, and then it becomes the relationship of the music in the room, and then it becomes the relationship of all that plus the audience and how they're taking it in, and what kind of energy they're feeding back to you. And the Clap Auditorium, where Music on the Mountain happens, is, I think, potentially one of the best rooms sound-wise in Northwest Arkansas. It's one of the funnest rooms to play because the floor slopes up. So when you're sitting on stage, you get to see every face in the audience. And it's just a really, really interesting shaped room with a nice stage. It needs to be redone, and that's what Music on the Mountain is doing right now.
The proceeds,
the $5 contribution, doesn't go towards the food, which Greenhouse Grill is so nice to offer, and Jam and Java Coffee and Rick's Bakery offering desserts. They're giving that to kind of entice people up there as well. But then the $5 donation that's suggested goes to refurbishing that room, hopefully making it one of the premier 400-seat auditoriums in Northwest Arkansas.
It's billed as Pat Hall and Friends.
Yeah.
Who are the Friends?
Well, in the studio with me today is John Stiers, who's been a professional musician most of his life, who's playing keyboard with me, although I think he made most of his fame and fortune doing bass and singing. And a little guy, a little friend of mine named Ezra Idlett, who's how many Grammys have you been nominated for?
We've been nominated for four.
Four.
That, which, as my partner Keith is fond of saying, makes us four-time losers.
It's kind of like being always the bridegroom. And I think this is going to be the year. This is going to be the year that Trout Fishing in America, yeah. Keith and Ezra are going to win a Grammy. I feel certain about that.
Well, and I want to talk a little bit later about the cajon, because, James, you built that, right? The percussion
Correct.
Instrument we're going to hear. But would it be you've written some new songs.
I've written some new songs. So let me go on quickly to say that Andy Goodson
yes.
will be playing with us on the mountain. And he sent his alter ego, which will be posted later on. They're going to use that in the promo and the photo that we're doing this afternoon. Andy couldn't be here, but he did blow up his face and put it on a two-dimensional cutout of Elvis, which makes me feel real comfortable with him looming over Ezra's head back there. That's going to be he's going to be one of the people playing with us. Noah Menard is going to play lead guitar with me for one set, and Rod Williams is going to play lead guitar with me for another set. Both those guitar players have been in many, many bands in Northwest Arkansas. So the reason that I asked my friends to come play with me is because these are the people that have, on multiple levels, really supported me and helped me to become a better musician and to keep writing songs and to keep trying to perfect my art to what degree it has been. So I owe them a lot. I owe these guys particularly, and another handful of guys who couldn't be with me on stage for one reason or another, but they mean a lot to me. They're tremendously supportive and tremendously inspiring to me.
Well, can we hear something?
Sure.
What are you going to play?
Sure. This is kind of autobiographical. It's called "Time Stands Still for No One."
Gentlemen, that was great.
Yeah.
That was great. You say that's somewhat autobiographical?
Yeah.
Is it ever scary?
And that's actually an old song. That song is from probably 1980.
Is it ever scary writing an autobiographical?
Oh, always, okay. always. Yeah, you know, songwriting for me started out as this therapeutic thing that I did when I was depressed and feeling horrible and to kind of get a lot of those bad feelings out. Consequently, all of my early songs are these really horrid, depressive, sad, minor things that, you know, nobody wants to hear, including me. But it kept me alive during that period of my life. And
Well, I wouldn't call that one depressing. I think there's a bit of melancholy.
Yeah. That one's just more kind of like real life. Yeah.
Well, the last autobiographical song he wrote, the police came to his house afterwards.
We try not to disclose all the details and everything. It's kind of like I've really been looking forward to doing a radio interview for two reasons. One, my wife tells me I have a face for radio, a perfect face for radio. And the other is I figure if the camera adds 10 pounds, then the radio ought to take 20 off, right?
It can take 20 off. For me, it adds 6 inches. Well, let me ask your friends a couple of questions here. Tell me about this cajon that is the percussion we're hearing.
What you're hearing is a box. I think cajon means box. And John Stiers, who's playing keyboards, built this one. This is the second one that he's built me. It's a lot larger. And what's really cool about this instrument is it offers a lot of different tones for backing up acoustic instruments. It's not overpowering and still provides a real rhythmic punch. Real good bass drum tone. Snare kind of a sound. And it just seems to function really well with acoustic music. Not a lot of cymbal work with this. And I hear a good reason for that. It seems to make songs sound really good. Phil Collins did a lot of stuff with no cymbals. And it's just a nice way to play drums. And I've always been a closet drummer. That's one of the things about Pat that I really love. He seems to be the guy that gets us all out of our common, everyday, ordinary ways of doing things and encourages us to do things that are different. You know, John is a professional bass player. He's playing keyboards. I play guitar and sing with Trout Fishing America, but I'm playing cajon with Pat. And I've watched Pat take people that have played guitar for maybe 6 months and put them on stage with him in the same band, bringing them up there. He's sort of enabler is the wrong word, but an encouraging personality, and I really do love that about working with Pat.
I'm sure that makes it for a fun experience, too.
Yeah. And these guys, I tell you, when you surround yourself with Class A professional musicians, it really makes you sound a whole lot better, which is, you know, one of the reasons why I like surrounding myself with these guys.
John, the way we have the studio set up today, you're kind of far away from a microphone, but I want to ask you about making the cajon. This is the second one you've made for Ezra. What's the secret to getting the good tones?
Actually, Ezra and I kind of collaborated on that one. I built one before. Actually, I built Andy Goodson one, and I got the plans off the internet, and the first one wasn't all that great, but I got with Ezra, and we talked about why it wasn't all that great, and we refined it to where they sound a lot better now, so I plan to make more.
It was so surprising. I had bought a cajon on the internet. I just knew I wanted to play one. And we were at a jam session at Pat's house. And John saw me play it. And the next time I saw John, he said, "Is this what you're playing?" And he had a cajon. I'm like, yeah. that's pretty much. He said, "What can I do to make it better?" And I said, "Well, maybe this or that." And he came up with another one that was better. And just beautiful, beautiful woodwork.
I think your words on the first one were burn it. No.
Not exactly.
Yeah. Kindlin. We named that one Kindlin.
And I guess we should describe, Ezra's actually sitting on it, and there's a seat on, and you're on top of it, and then...
Mm-hmm. And there's a hole in the side for the sound to come out.
I play it with my hands and brushes. Some people play it with just their hands. It's a different sound with just your hands. That's just your hand. But the brushes kind of give it that more of a snare...
Plus, the way you palm the brushes, you can get different tones.
Pat, you mentioned that writing songs has helped save you, help keep you going. What possesses you to write songs now?
You know, one of my brothers, I think probably a little bit disgusted with all the melancholy downer songs that I wrote in my early 20s, said, "Do you ever write songs when you're happy?" And I had to think about that, and I said, "No, I don't guess I ever do." He said, "Next time you're feeling really good, why don't you go write a song?" and I started writing happier songs. Also, I was real opposed in my younger days to using real standard 1-4-5 chord progressions and standard songwriting methods. And so some of the songs are very esoteric and weird, and we'll play some of those on stage at the performance because they're interesting and fun to listen to, but they're not as fun to hear and play as the more traditional 1-4-5 chord progression songs. So that became a challenge in my later life was, why are those things the way they are? And to me, it's a kind of a representation of something that maybe is a much more real and deeper. I guess string theorists talk about this too, how everything is maybe just a vibration and a harmonies of vibrations and coordinations of harmonies of vibrations building on each other to make the world around us. And so, I think there's a reason why our ear tends towards those 1-4-5 chord progressions and why we think, oh, that sounds great. But maybe not. Oriental music doesn't do that, so maybe that's all cultural. But I've been studying in the last 10 years more traditional chord progressions and ways of writing songs that's been new to me because I tried to stay away from that for the first 20 years that I wrote songs.
Well, could we hear something else?
Yes, absolutely.
What will we be hearing here?
How Can I Miss You if you won't ever leave?
No, John. let's do something. Now, Kyle, you really won't sing with us? If we do a sing-along, you won't do any? You could cut it out, edit your...
No. Editing equipment doesn't work quite like that.
It doesn't?
I'm sure there are very...
It's just one word.
What's the word?
Huma huma nuku nuku apu a.
Okay, well, we're gonna. Here's the thing.
That's just one word.
You almost had me.
I almost had you.
We're gonna have to go a little bit easier than that.
We'll see if we can break it down for you when we get in there. I guess I ought to tell you that my in-laws live in Kauai, Hawaii, and if you're gonna have in-laws, that's a great place to keep them. You don't mind going there once a year, and they don't just drop in to see you. I've got a beautiful niece who's one of my favorite relatives. Her name is Yara, and she's featured a little bit in this song, and it's called Yara's Song, or the subtitle is Huma Huma Nuku Nuku Apu Apa. In the last of the states, at the end of the chain, is the oldest of the islands, and Kauai is her name. Kauai got the sun, Kauai got the waves. In Kauai, hang loose and enjoy the days. Kauai got the tarot and the spirit of aloha. Any little reef fish with a big name, Huma Huma Nuku Nuku Apu Ah. That's it right there, Kyle. That's what you're going to sing in just a minute. You can get it. We'll break it down for you. This side of Hyena, just past Tonalei, for the meal of your life, stop in at the Mediterranean Gourmet, where yarrow's not a flower, no, yarrow's not a spice, where yarrow is a beautiful woman and the owner's wife. Kauai got the beaches and the beautiful shore. In Kauai, a body could not really ask for more. Singing Huma Huma Nuku Nuku Apu Ah. Huma Huma Nuku Nuku Apu Ah. Huma Huma Nuku Nuku Apu Ah. He's having a little trouble with that thing, John. Maybe we ought to break that down for him. Sing Huma
Huma.
Sing Huma Huma.
Huma Huma.
Sing Huma. Keep it up now, boys. Kauai got the sun, Kauai got the waves. In Kauai, hang loose and enjoy the days. Kauai got the beaches and
the beautiful shore. In Kauai, a body could not really ask for more. Singing Huma Huma Nuku Nuku Apu Ah Ah, Huma Huma Nuku Nuku Apu Ah Ah, Huma Huma Nuku Nuku Apu Ah Ah, Huma Huma Nuku Nuku Apu Ah Ah.
That's your debut.
Yes,
that's your
it was.
Debut, Kyle. You're singing on the radio. That's excellent.
It's a fantastic song. That is a fantastic song, is it not? And that is the state fish of Hawaii, I believe.
It is.
Yes.
See, he knew that. That's great.
I had a long conversation with my nephew and niece a couple months ago because it was actually my niece who, for her second grade class, had to pick a state and tell everything about it. And she told me that the state fish was this name. She'll be thrilled to know that it came into.
Excellent. Maybe you can play that song.
That's a beautiful song.
Thank you.
I absolutely adore that song.
And see, that song's just 1-4-5 over and over again. Musically, that's as simple as it gets. So, you know, originally I started out writing this very weird, esoteric chord progressions that were impossible to follow. Jam breakers, we call them now. And I have, over the years, tried to figure out, What about simple songs is fun and good and interesting and all that kind of stuff? So,
we should tell people that Pat Hall and Friends will be at Clap Auditorium, Mount Sequoia. That is Tuesday, July 3rd, July 4th Eve.
Yes.
And as you mentioned, the proceeds go to Clap Auditorium. And where can people will you have the CDs?
We'll have the CDs at the show, and we'll be happy to sell the CDs for a very reasonable price.
Ezra, John, and Pat, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you.